you feeling or thinking along with millions of people as you watched the presidential candidates debate each other last night? Did the words and the attitude match up? If you missed the debate, I'm sure you heard about it by now. We are here to share an insider's perspective and so much more. I'm Nita Valens. Welcome to InnerVision, where we talk about health, psychology, and your well-being. Today, our guest is Chris Ulrich, a body language expert and political consultant. He's the founder of See You in the Moment, a company with a multidisciplined approach to educating clients about body language, personal confidence, and presentation skills. Ulrich is also a media consultant and appeared on Good Morning America Today, and he can frequently be seen on CNN, MSNBC, and Headline News, and is also a senior instructor at the Body Language Institute. Welcome to InnerVision, Chris Ulrich.
Hi there. Thank you for having me, Nita. It's a real pleasure and an honor to be with you.
You're welcome. I'm so excited because I got some trivia items here. We had approximately 80 million people watching the debates last night. That's almost twice as many for Obama and Romney. Do these debates really matter? I mean, that's a lot of people.
Yes. You know, this is being considered, like some people are calling it the Super Bowl of debates, because that's an audience you get when you watch the Super Bowl. Yes, they do matter, and especially this one, if, you know, from the perspective of, I think, a direction for the country. We have two very distinct characters that are with different visions. You know, we've heard Donald Trump, and I'm happy to go into it as much as you like.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Hillary Clinton as much, but we have different visions, right? We hear Make America Great Again, and then we, from him, understand what that means. And then at the same time, we hear Stronger Together. And really, if we break down those message boards, what's underneath it, if you fall under the Hillary camp or you fall under the Trump camp, I couldn't help but notice the day before when I was walking around and I heard people talking, and for everyone from friends to people in coffee shops, that they were really tuning into this one because they were generally concerned for the state of the country. Some folks who start to see Trump as a threat, or other people who see Hillary as not trustworthy, or depending upon the narratives that are out there.
So Donald Trump kept interrupting and taking longer than his allotted time. Did that help or hurt him?
Well, it's a great, again, you know, when we're talking about body language media, we need to step back and think about it as the optics. It's really about the perceived, like body language on its own doesn't really have meaning. We give it meaning. And in that, we're talking about perception. So the question is, did both candidates or either candidate come across as a high perceived value or a low perceived value? Or were the activities and the actions that they were taking, were they benefiting them or were they undermining them in that moment? And so if we think about that, a lot of times, you know, in debates, in the history of debates in politics, it's not so much what you say, it's how you look while you say what you say, which either helps you or hurts you. There have been those cases in the past where something someone says is a gaffe. It comes across. Back in the 70s when Gerald Ford was debating Carter, mm-hmm. he said, there's no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe. And he was implying that the spirit of the Eastern Europeans will always be bold. But the way it was read was he was gaffing. So that's an example of him saying something where a great example of someone's optics when George Bush, the senior, looked at his watch in the town hall. It was read as he's not interested, there's somewhere else he needs to be. So if we look at the body language of these two and we watch Donald Trump, whose whole MO, his modus operandi, is to be dominant. He's a dominant figure. He gets big in his body. He takes up huge amounts of space, Nita. He'll put his arms out way up to the side. He'll often make himself the biggest person in the room. Physically, he uses interruption, he uses snide comments, he uses those other comments to stay relevant, to try to throw his opponent off. And the question, it's a great question. Some people will tell you that, oh, by doing that, we heard his voice, it was effective, he was powerful. I happen to think that in those particular moments, the constant interruption, had he interrupted her at strategic intervals, it might have been more effective. But he constantly had a comment, he had a snide remark, he would do this, sound, right? And I think those things hurt him. If we think back to when Al Gore ran, and he was debating then George W. Bush, he, much better debater, but he rolled his eyes, he had these sounds, these sigh sounds, ultimately, although he won the debate, when people talked about it over the course of the week and the post spin, he lost. He was like, you know, what's wrong with that guy? Trying to be the smartest guy in the room. It came across as insincere, insecure, and why would he do that? So I think that's how we're seeing it play out with Donald Trump. I don't think it helped him. It's a long-winded answer to your question to your answer, but it gives you kind of a flavor for it. It just really depends on the situation. And in that situation yesterday, I don't think it helped him.
I like it. I'm glad you give the detail because you're not going to be interrupted during our time together because we're a public station and we love long detailed answers because we like to delve deep. This is our first time together on the air, but I know I'll have you back because you're fabulous. And I explored your website and you had this, these are visual things I would love the audience to go take a look at because you have these great. And the website is See You in the Moment. That's the letter C, the letter U in the moment.com. And you have these little vignettes where you're showing how people shake hands and you're showing all kinds of different elements that we really don't notice. So when we, like, for example, last night when Trump's family joined him and they left quickly. Hillary's family joined her and she hung around shaking hands and things like that. Yeah. So that would give me the impression that, oh, he just was like sort of disgusted and he has to move on to his next activity, where she stayed around and like she's showing that she cares about the people. Is that something relevant or am I reading the whole thing incorrectly?
Well, you know, it's optics. So from a perception perspective, right, it may have been that they weren't expected to stay afterward, that the cameras are off, and he said hello, and then he left. Could have been. We literally have to ask him. You know, when he was walking out the door, they peppered him with a couple of questions, you know, and so that's an opportunity for us to be like, Mr. Trump, why in such a hurry, you know, or, you know, and they peppered him with a couple of questions about, I think, his taxes or what he thought of Lester Holt, and he answered them quickly and left. It could have also been, and this is total speculation, I have no idea, I'm not a doctor, but he was sniffling a lot during it. It made me wonder if possibly he was catching a cold, and so he was anxious to get out of there. We literally have to ask him. Otherwise, we are mind-reading a little bit.
Yes.
We all do that. And
yes.
So to hang around, normally they're both kind of shake hands a little bit, and she's more traditional in that sense. So also, to be in the room there also it gives them time. People vacate the room, and having Trump go out first, he had to deal with the press first. So, you know, I don't think she talked to the press afterwards. So that's a choice that they both had. So you're right. It's great optics. She was relaxed afterwards. She stepped out into the audience. She said hello. Much more traditional political activity. So it could be that Trump wanted to get out of there. Could be he was done. He was literally, was just done for the night, or that he wasn't feeling well, or he didn't know when said to him, you should stay longer and greet people and see some of your supporters. So it's just all, but optically, you're right. You caught that. It's kind of like, wow, where was he going, right? It raises those questions. Normally, they stay around until, like, the cameras are pretty much off, and then the family is up on the stage. They wave, and then they take a step off. So, and that's a great picture, to be up there with the family. Even in 2012, when Obama had a terrible first debate, Michelle came up and hugged him, and they stayed up on the stage for a while, so he didn't rush off. So it's an interesting thing to notice, and we just don't know why. We have to ask him.
Yes, I realize that we look at a situation. I'm a psychotherapist. I know we look at a situation, we make up a story. We all do that all day long. And what I like about what you do is that you distinguish between the story that we sort of project onto a situation or mind read, as you say, versus, I wonder what's really going on.
Right. You know, Anita, one of the things we always talk about, aside from the election, is that in general, if you don't know a lot about body language, or you do know a lot about body language, one of the keys is a three-step process that I'd love to just give your listeners is, you know, when you're meeting with anybody, if it's Donald Trump or your boss or your neighbor or your spouse, you know, what is that person's baseline? How do they normally carry themselves? Are they open with their body language? Are they hand talkers? You know, do they cross their arms a lot when they talk to you? Like, what's their baseline behavior? And then when we see changes from that baseline behavior, we call it hot spots. the more of those different changes, I guess I'm always talking with my hands, but now some of my arms are crossed or whatever. It's just a change. It's a deviation. We call it a hot spot, or a cluster of them if it's a bunch of them. And then a lot of body language experts out there will stop there. They'll tell you this means this and this means that, but I don't believe that. Some of my colleagues, like Janine Driver, we don't believe that. We believe that you got to do your due diligence. You got to ask open-ended, powerful questions. Hey, maybe I'm wrong here, but I sense that I said something that made you uncomfortable or whatever. And when we do that, we blow up the barriers that are between us and what's going on with this other person. It's an opportunity there. I always say that's where the magic happens. That's where we can develop trust. That's where there's an opportunity to build rapport with someone, be like, wow, this person's really interested. So we let go of the story for a little while. We open ourselves up to hearing what's really going on, and we hold the space to listen. And that's where I think the real beauty of that body language can be, is in our ability to communicate, connect, and interact in a dynamic and powerful way.
Well, that reminds me of something I saw on your website where you talk about when we fold our arms. In some interpretations, it's like I'm folding my arms, so I'm closing up to the conversation. But I actually fold my arms a lot when I'm standing up. I'll even pace when I'm thinking about something. And
right.
So it's really, is that a cultural difference, or what is that old psychology versus what really?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would look at it more from, keep in mind that when we talk about body language, there's a lot of myths out there about body language. And one of them is that cross arms only means that you're shutting down or you're disinterested. It can mean that. It also may mean that your baseline is you cross your arms because it's comfortable.
Right.
But there's some science out there that shows that when we cross our arms, we're engaging all parts of our brain. There were studies done out there that show that we're 30% more likely to work through a difficult problem and find a solution with our arms crossed. And the idea is that it's kind of engaging all parts of the body. You know, the other thing is like if people who work with autistic children will say if an autistic child is having an episode, to cross their arms is almost like a self-hug. And that's the feeling, the sensory feeling is also beneficial. It's a self-touch gesture. It's a pacifying gesture. It helps calm us. And so in those moments, we think better. You know, they did a study and they took two groups of people and they put people in a room and they had to answer math problems and anagrams. I think it was, and definitely math problems. And they put another group in the other room, had them answer the math problems. And they had one group put their hands on the table in between each answer, or if they were struggling with it, and they had another group cross their arms. And what they found was the group that crossed their arms answered their test scores were higher, and they stayed 30% longer to work through the problem. So it's an idea that tells us there's more to cross arms than it's just shutting down, or it's a baseline, or people may do it to work through an issue. You said when you pace and you're thinking, you may cross your arms. So you may be working through the issue, and sometimes crossing arms can be a beneficial tool to use in that process, to have in your tool bag.
That's so interesting. There's so many ways to interpret. With me today is Chris Ulrich, body language expert. Do you think that people have decided who they're going to vote for?
Well, that's a great question. I think there are three different types of folks out there, I think, and maybe even a fourth group. I think there is the folks that have decided, that are either a hardcore Democrat or maybe not necessarily hardcore, but they're Democrat and they like what they hear from Hillary enough, or she might not be the perfect candidate for them, but they feel that she's much better than Trump, or you know, it's more in line with their thinking. And then you'll have the same on the flip side for Republicans, but a little more of a split in their world. There's conservative Republicans who don't agree with Trump, and he's a bit of a disruptor in the party, but have come around to the fold that they would vote for their side before they would vote for Hillary. So there's your core groups there. And then you have a third group of people that are not going to vote either way for them. They're going to vote for they're going to either not vote or a protest vote. And then there is the undecideds. Some people will say that that's 15%, 20%, could be more, a little less than that. And then if you do get some of the third-party folks to turn around and then decide to vote for one of the other two candidates, that's always a possibility. But that's where I think, you know, people will have those are the folks that – and there are also sometimes the group of people that are just starting to tune in. you know, that there's so much noise every day, Anita, in the political race. This race has been going on for almost 2 years on
right.
both sides.
And it really has, yes.
Right? Yeah, and think about this debate yesterday was literally the first time we've seen the two candidates for president of the United States from each major party on the stage together, and we are 41 days away from the election. So there is that group of people that is now finally tuning in, and so that's the group that they're after. And that's the undecided in each one of the battleground states, the key states that will determine the election, as well as and maybe, you know, put them over or keep them going in other states that they don't want to end up in a toss-up, or where it may lean Hillary or lean Democrat or lean Republican. So that's the small group that they're after in these debates, as well as reinforcing their base and generating greater turnout, getting more people. Hillary's in North Carolina today, and she's saying it's all about get out the vote today for her. And Trump has signed up a lot more Republicans than that people were disenfranchised and not into politics have been excited by that campaign. The message resonates with them, and so they're going out. So it could be a larger turnout than we've ever seen, and both have their struggles. You know, Trump has his struggles with some of the more moderate Republicans who are put off by his message, and Hillary has the ongoing issue of dealing with millennials. They are not inspired by our message, like we saw with Bernie Sanders or we saw with President Obama.
Right. Okay, well, I think I interrupted your three-step process, if you want to go back to that.
Oh, no, the first step is just that, you know, we baseline somebody. We spot, when we see hot spots or deviations from that baseline, is step two. And step three is just simply literally doing our due diligence, like we do with everything. We need to research it. We need to ask, and it's literally we need to engage that other person. We need to ask the open-ended. We need to have the courage to ask those questions. And there's two phrases that we always use. I'd love to pass these on to your listeners. Is they're the same expressions we give to law enforcement, to salespeople, to government officials, to private business folks. And it's just as a way to connect with someone else is these two phrases. One is, hey, maybe I'm wrong here. And then you follow up, right? Hey, maybe I'm wrong here, but I sense that you're not comfortable with the current direction of the campaign, or, you know, whatever it is. Or is there any reason why? Hey, when I asked you if you wanted to invest in this, is there any reason why you seem to get quiet? You know, or whatever it is, you know, however you want to frame the question. It's just, we call it kind of confrontational light. It's an opportunity to engage the question without directly calling someone out in such a way that you put them off. Instead, you're inviting further dialogue. And that's, again, where that magic happens, where people will be like, okay, this person's serious here. They want to really have a conversation. Okay, maybe this is someone I can trust. Right, and it's just a tool. Sometimes they will, sometimes they won't. So it's that's our, it's very simple. When I give a talk, I always say, "Listen, if you take nothing else away from my talk today, I want you to have these three steps in your mind, you know, as you're relating to somebody else."
That's so useful. I love that. You know, right. Both candidates have a lot of baggage. Do you think that one is more likable than the other?
Well, again, it's a really what a great question. You know, if we think about both candidates, it kind of comes across as scorched earth. If you're not a Hillary fan, she's a liar. She doesn't tell the truth. She's distrustful. Each action that happens only reinforces that narrative, right? When she got sick with pneumonia, rather than tell us she got sick with pneumonia, she made a big deal out of it, tried to work through it, and then was all hush about it, and then finally announced it. And that fits into that narrative that's being written by her opponents, that she's not trustworthy, you never know what's going on with her, she's secretive and defensive, and she's even acknowledged on some things that she gets that way. And part of that is, for 30-plus years in politics, she's been battling her enemies. So that armor comes from her history, right?
Yes.
From the, you know, if you said the baggage, I think it's, we carry it, you know, each of us carry it a different way. And so it shows up in how she processes certain situations or scenarios. I also, you know, we have to remember that these are just people. You know, the other day here in Washington, there was the opening of the African American Culture Museum.
Oh, yes. Very exciting.
There's a great shot that was caught of President Bush standing next to Mrs. Obama, and she's hugging him, and he's leaning back over her shoulder. It's just a very fascinating picture, right? These were, you know, the political distance between the two are vast, but people may not realize that it was Bush who signed the order
Yes, he did in 2003. Right? Yes.
Yeah. So he does that.
He funded it basically. I mean, he wrote that would bring forth the funding actually. That's so funny because I was going to ask you what you thought of that.
Oh, right. I think it's fantastic. You know, I think it's a reminder to us all to take a deep breath. And the flip side for, you know, Trump is that if you go back and you watch other interviews with Trump, it's almost like Trump has stepped into a caricature that he's playing and he's using. Now, he's always made really off-putting comments, a lot of that stuff, but we also hear and see stories of a more humble Trump earlier. If you watch old interviews with him in the early David Letterman, or, you know, it was just more reserved. And so it makes you wonder at one point he jumped with, you know, full feet in with some of his comments and other activities, right? So underneath this, like, you know, there are some people I'm sure that have benefited, that he's been kind to, and same, you know, individually, one-on-one, you hear that they're very gracious. Same with Hillary. I've had the honor to meet her several times, and she's incredibly gracious. She's passionate. She cares deeply about the country, and both of them have, you know, dealt with their bumps, the baggage, as you kindly call it. And it's and so we look at them through that filter. At the end of the day, I think we always just need to take a breath and remember that's two people up there, whether we agree with them or disagree with them. They are they walk the planet with us.
So that's a good point.
Yeah, right?
Yes. With me today is Chris Ulrich. He's a body language expert, political consultant, and founder of See You in the Moment, a company with a multidisciplined approach to educating clients about body language, personal confidence, and presentation skills. So go to his site, letter U in the moment.com. It's fabulous. And, you know, there's always this next day media frenzy over the debates. And this is probably the most busiest I've ever seen ever, and probably because twice as many people watched it as for Obama and Romney. So do you think that the media is influencing voters after the debates?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think that the real debate is won in the week after the debate. And an example of that is when I mentioned it earlier, when George W. Bush and Al Gore debated, one of the criticisms of Bush W. was that he would be a lightweight, but he handled himself well in the debate.
Yes,
yet
he did.
Al Gore was better. He knew his material better. He was smarter and sharper on the topics, et cetera. He had his plans, et cetera. But included in that was a lot of what we talked about earlier, the sighs.
Yeah, the sounds.
You know,
because it could be interpreted that those are sounds of disgust or sounds of impatience or sounds of, I'm so much better than you. What are you even doing here? Why are we here? That snobbery thing, which won't play with the typical American citizen, because it's going to be like, well, if that's how you're treating the other candidate, why would I think you care about me or my needs?
Right. And so, you know, so the way the follow-up articulation of that is broken down over the course of the week, when it got into the punditry, when it got into the post-spin, that's what got focused on. What's interesting today, Anita, is that, you know, day after, what are we talking about? We're talking about areas. So this is why I don't think, you asked me earlier if the interruptions of Trump were effective. I don't think so. Maybe one or two of them, but he did it so often. On top of it, he made those.
Yeah, it just got irritating.
So I think in those moments, I think it hurt him in the same way. The another thought I had for you on that. Let me think about it for a sec. Trump sounds like that. Oh, yeah. So in the course of the week, what's being talked about is the birther issue today, race issue. His taxes are being talked about. All deficits for him, all stuff that, you know, when he attacked her, he attacked her on the emails, and when he attacked her on it, she didn't have an answer for it. She didn't smile or do anything. But he dropped it. So it's a very interesting. So today in the spin, right? So you asked about the press.
Yes.
It's a very interesting. So just like that, for Gore, it was, or for Obama, it was that, you know, during his first debate, he had a terrible first debate. What was wrong with him? What did he do wrong? And so that was the talk. The narrative was continued. The grooves of the narrative continued to get deeper. That, we had a terrible debate. And then we saw Romney have an increase. So, and then, and that, so that will there be a bump out of this in the polls for Hillary? And so you'll see her people trying to discount that and be like, well, there's two more debates. We have a lot more work to do. And, you know, because it's the press saying, well, we see a giant bump, you know, for her in the polls. And if we don't, what does that mean? It, you know, Trump can do no wrong, you know, whatever it is. So, and so it's very interesting. If you're the Trump campaign, this is not what you wanted coming out of this debate. You wanted the conversation to be about making America great again, that, you know, we're disgusted with the status quo, that for too long people in Washington, and we see this when he's speaking, he's doing all kinds of these facial expressions, emotions.
Yes.
That feel like disgust. And I talk about those on the website a little bit. You know, the micro expression is it's what we're really feeling in the moment. It flashes for a blink of an eye. We see him flash contempt a bunch of times at her when she's taking, when she's attacking him. So we see that disgust. And so for a lot of people, when they tune in, they feel that. If you're a Trump person, you feel that disgust. You feel that contempt. You're like, we've got to break this system. Government is destroying this country. We've got to go back to make America great again. You know, so there's that side of it. And then for her, being more calm in her demeanor and laughing off a lot of his attacks. And not being bitten by them had her coming across more likable. And she also did a lot of gestures that were more open. She basically did a basketball steeple. And it's literally if I had a basketball in my hand, you know, how the hands are in that position. That's called a basketball steeple. You're open. Mm-hmm. You come across with power and authority and control, but with compassion. You're reaching out to your audience versus pointing at the audience. You know, she has a tendency when she's doing rallies, when she gets into her rhythm, to point. And that can become across as lecturing or scolding. So some of the things, some of the ideas of this being, is she likable or not? You know, so she spent a lot of time focused on being cool and calm, not being baited back into arguments with him, and spending a lot of time doing, showing us body language that was open, friendly, and likable as a way to kind of help us build confidence that that is somebody we could like, because Americans seem to want to like their president.
Yes, isn't that interesting? Well, I know we're running on the clock here with you because you have to go to another interview, but I'm going to let the callers come in at 818-985-5735. And callers, I want you to share what you're feeling about this, what you're feeling about the debates, about this information. What are you thinking? What's going on? 818-985-5735. And I think we have to let you go. I'm so sad because I'm having so much fun with you.
I have about 4 minutes.
Oh, okay, great. All right, we'll just keep you then, and maybe you'll get to talk to a caller. 818-985-5735. With me is body language expert Chris Ulrich, and we also want to give a little thank you to Janine Driver, who put us together with you.
Yes.
And
yes,
we said we would mention her company, which you also are one of the senior instructors for.
Yes, and we do classes. We do these great three-day intensive retreats up in Wells, Maine, and where we get together and lights out nonstop for 2.5 days of body language training. We use improvisation. We use role play. We use a lot of stuff that so you walk out of there with all kinds of tools that have you you're mastering body language and bringing it back to your world, be it professional or personal or whatever works for you.
And I love her book title, You Can't Lie to Me, and her site is lyintamer.com. It just cracked me up when I saw that. I just love that.
Right.
So we actually are, there's one kind of teeny question I wanted to ask you because as the callers are racking up, do you think more people like Hillary or more people like Trump?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that. I would be speculating. I think that
that's okay.
I think there's a great deal of concern on both sides of that aisle.
Yes.
I think that people want to be inspired, and I don't think they're feeling it. I know I have a lot of Republican friends that are very disgruntled. I also have a lot of millennial friends and friends that are not feeling inspired by Hillary either. I don't know if it's personal in their like or dislike. I think they are concerned about the message. What is the message? How will things change? How will the country be better? And I think it comes back to that like as well. It's a very thought-provoking question you asked, and one to ponder. I think, you know, we know these people as public officials, and I think we unfortunately see more rather than less people dislike these two candidates as candidates and possibly even as people than the opposite.
Okay, well, let's take a question from Chuck in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm calling with a question regarding behavior I witnessed throughout the W. Bush administration, where whether it was Condoleezza Rice or George himself or Donald Rumsfeld, they would always say yes while nodding their head no and say no while shaking their head yes. I think I might know what that means, but I'd like his opinion on that, expert opinion.
Sure. Well, sure. Like one of the first things we always need to think about is what's their baseline. You know, is it something they do all the time? But a large portion of times, when someone says no to you and they shake their head yes, it's a hot spot. It is a potential sign for deception. A great example of it is when Alex Rodriguez was being interviewed by Katie Couric way back in the first performance-enhancing drugs encounter, where they asked him if he had ever used performance-enhancing drugs, and he said no, and he shook his head yes, and he flashed contempt on his face. So it's just that we don't know what he's saying yes to, but it's a no to us to be like, ah, that's a hot spot. We need to follow up. We need to ask a powerful question. So in those moments when you saw that with folks in the Bush administration, that would be my first. You know, if I saw that, it would be a hot spot. I would follow up. Yeah.
Okay. Great question. Thank you, Chuck.
Yeah. I unfortunately need to run, unfortunately. The folks here are telling me it's time for me to head into the interview.
That's okay. Thank you so much, Chris Ulrich. And your site is, you want to give your site and help
sure.
people find you?
It's seeyouinthemoment.com. Please take a look at the site. If you have some follow-up questions that we didn't get a chance to talk about here, you can reach me through my website. I'd be happy to talk with you more. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I hope we can talk again. I really enjoyed your really thoughtful questions, and I just urge all your folks out there, whether you're feeling one way or the other, please show up and vote on Election Day.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Chris Ulrich. We'll speak again.
All right.
And you're welcome. Blessings to you. And we are going to take more of your calls at 818-985-5735 right after our quick little break here on InterVision. I'm your host, Nita Valens. Looking forward to speaking to you and hearing how you feel and what you think right after this.
KPFK's Fall Fun Drive starts Tuesday, October 4th, and continues until October 25th. And we need you to help staff our phone room. If you have some time to volunteer, please do call our front desk at 818-985-2711 and press 0 for the operator during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. All shifts in the phone room really need to be filled, so your participation is greatly appreciated. It's a fun and friendly environment and a great place to meet like-minded listeners who care about free speech and non-corporate influence programming. We look forward to seeing you here at KPFK starting October 4th, and we're located, just so you know, at 3729 Cahuenga Boulevard West in beautiful North Hollywood near the Universal City Metro Red Line, right next to the 101 freeway at Lancashire. Hope to see you here.
This is your golden opportunity to weigh in with me right here, right now, on what you felt or thought about the debate last night between Hillary and Donald. 818-985-5735. And we just had a very cool lesson in body language by Chris Ulrich. And I have some interesting tidbits for you. It turns out that there's all kinds of post-debate chatter that goes on for years and years and years. For example, it turns out that when, let me see, it was about, this would have been in 1960, our producer sent us this little tidbit that for the Kennedy-Nixon debates, Kennedy looked straight into the camera when he answered questions. He came off as confident and sincere, but people who heard the debate on the radio felt that Nixon was the winner, but the viewers watching said Nixon looked nervous. So, it's interesting. We hear, but we don't see, and we get one impression. We see and we hear, and we get another impression. Also, Reagan won by a landslide against Carter. And Reagan kept using the phrase, "There you go again, there you go again." Did that help him win, or was it not a factor? Very interesting. Now, a lot of the popular media was reporting this morning that Donald Trump did not seem to be prepared. So what do you think? Give me a call. Let's discuss. 818-985-5735. And we're going to go to Sasha in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
I hear you great.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking my call. I did listen to most of the debate last night on the radio, and then I saw a little bit of it, you know, toward the end on television, and saw some of the replay. You know, to me, this seems that we should be more outraged than anything else, rather than debating amongst ourselves, well, who's the winner of this, because we're all the loser. And, the corporate media are clearly the winners, who are going to reap billions of dollars for selling our eyeballs to the advertisers.
I love how you said that.
And, yes. And the fact that we have, 4 presidential candidates, not 2, and they're basically shoving these 2 complete, toxic buffoons down our throats, and saying those are our choices, when Jill Stein is out there putting her life on the line, being arrested or coming close to it, just, you know, for coming near the campus where the debate's taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And did you get a chance to see her debate this morning on Democracy Now or listen to it?
I did not. I was working. You want to share a little about that?
You know, I just wanted to ask you, because basically what they did was, it was originally they invited Gary Johnson, who apparently didn't respond because he didn't do so well in the debate, another alternative debate with Jill Stein in the past, apparently. And so I guess he's not really that interested in debating Jill Stein on live television or,
uh-huh,
on, you know, for a larger audience.
I see.
So what they did was they took the debate last night, and then they played portions of that, and then Jill Stein's responses were intercut into that. And so I just urge people, if you really want to see the debate, well, it took place this morning on Democracy Now. You can watch it on demand.
Yes, it's all over the dial, actually. And so that's a good recommendation. Thank you so much, Sasha. Appreciate your call.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'm taking your calls on 818-985-5735. What did you think about the debate? What did you feel about the debate? Let's go to Drew in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nita.
Hi.
Third time, long time.
Yes?
Hello?
Yeah. No, I hear you fine. Go ahead.
Okay, good. I just wanted to say, you were talking about body language and mannerisms, and I kind of felt like, first of all, as you said, or as somebody else said, Trump did seem very unprepared and was very much on the attack of Hillary. It seemed like all he wanted to do was kind of attack her. And at the same time, she seemed confident and calm and interrupted him a lot less than he interrupted her. But she also... it was interesting. She just seemed to have kind of this mannequin-type, smug half-smile on her face through the entire debate, which I found a little overconfident, maybe a little disturbing. I'm not really sure. What are your thoughts on that?
You know what you just reminded me of? You reminded me of when Bill was president, And there was something, some rumor about that they had really horrible fights, like screaming fights, and that one rumor was she threw a lamp at him. Now, I cannot substantiate any of this because it was, like, you know, completely unsubstantiated, but these kinds of things stay around, okay? And if it just popped into my mind, so when you're describing how she looked, I'm thinking, well, maybe she's trying to look so serene and so cool so that she does not remind people of that she had this reputation of being somewhat ill-tempered or somewhat easy to fly off the handle back 20 years ago or whenever it was. So that.
So you're saying almost like she's trying to deflect anything, any reminder or any memory in people's minds of what they might have heard about those past incidences.
Yes, and I don't know that she would be thinking exactly of what I'm saying, and of course I can't say whether it's true or not because these were just rumors kind of flying around Hollywood, but I do think that if she has people, you know, everybody has their people, like both candidates have their posses, okay, and their advisors,
right,
et cetera. So if that is something that anybody in the camp remembers and said, oh, well, you know, be sure you're really, like, don't lose your temper no matter what. Don't lose your temper. I mean, that's the kind of advice I'd give somebody who would previously be known as, you know, like a hothead or something like that. So that is
right.
That's one thing that came into my mind. But the other thing is what Chris was saying a while ago, my guest, that three-step process, like we've been watching the Clintons for many years, but do we know really their true baseline behavior? Maybe we don't, because maybe we see a media presentation. So I think it's very hard to judge, actually. I'm not giving you a very good answer, but I think it's hard.
No, I agree with you. I also think that, you know, Donald Trump is lacking any eloquence in the way that he's speaking. And he used, like, last night, and this just irked me, he used the word, at least twice that I heard, like, right in succession, he used bigly. I mean, who uses that? I don't know.
That's strange.
He doesn't speak eloquently. He said something, you know, we had this problem, bigly, bigly. Not prepared. A lot of people I'm finding don't trust or are disgusted with both of them, but the problem, I think that, you know, especially when I'm hearing, and his name escapes me, the professor that was on point with his predictions about who would be president, I think, in the, you know, since the Reagan era, and even though he's a Democrat, he predicts that Trump will be the next president. Did you hear this?
I did not, but I did just now check dictionary.com, and I'm not finding the word bigly.
But wait.
I did find big lie, B-I-G-L-I-E. So that's kind of funny. But I got lots of calls, Drew, so thank you so much. And be sure and vote no matter what you do, and thank you so much for your call. And let's go to Monica in Santa Monica. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Nita. I really enjoyed the show today.
You're welcome.
It's interesting to hear some of the comments, especially the fact that, like, on Twitter I saw a lot of, and I don't know if you mentioned this or not because I didn't hear the very beginning, but a lot of people were commenting about Donald Trump having the sniffles. And
yes.
You know, the kind of thing that you don't hear people talk about his health the way you hear people talk about, you know, Hillary's health. And I think that there's definitely a double standard, even when the last caller who made a lot of really good points and talked about Hillary's expression and how is she supposed to look? I mean, if any of us were up there and these, you know, things were flying around that Trump was saying and all these accusations, you know, how can she look? I mean, is there a look that would be a good look?
That's such a good question. I mean,
for
yeah.
Like, there's not really going to be a good look for her to have in that case. I want to talk about his looks, you know, because I think in politics, similar to poker, you have to have a kind of facial expression that doesn't necessarily give away everything that you're thinking and what's going through your mind. And he wears his feelings on his sleeves. He's scary to me, and it has nothing to do with, you know, who I like or which side I'm on or anything like that. If I just came here from another country and I was watching this, you know, I would definitely say that Hillary appears to be the one that seemed to be stable and logical. However, no one really had any answers to anything. And, you know, that's what concerns me, is we're so far off and pointing fingers and accusing people and who said or did what, that, you know, that wasn't covered. And I also did not think that either one of them spoke to the everyday hardworking person in this country, or, you know, the diminishing middle class or the non-middle class or whatever you want to call, just people like myself who go to work every day, do a good job, and want to move ahead. I did not feel that either one of them spoke to that issue.
That's such
and
a good point, Monica. Yes.
To me, for anxiety, and that's all I want to say, is I just feel a lot of, you know, stress and anxiety and where the country is going and what's going to be happening with whatever kind of leadership we're going to have.
Yes, absolutely. And you raised some excellent points, and I thank you so much for your call. And please remember to get out and vote. Everybody has to vote. I don't care who you vote for, but we got to make a statement here. We got to vote. So let's go to in Thousand Oaks. Mark, welcome to the program.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Actually, yes, my call kind of piggybacks on just the last one. You know, I was a Bernie supporter. I moved over to Hillary. But I'm really tired of the double standard that's put on Hillary. I mean, the caller before her that you had mentioned about the word smug, I see the word smug all over the Internet. But we have to remember that it was only a couple weeks ago that she didn't smile enough. I mean, this is just not right. She came to me totally prepared. Maybe the first 20 minutes of the debate was somewhat cohesive. But when they talked about the birtherism, about nuclear, he came totally unglued. And you'd think his mannerisms, the only reason it's important with him is because he brought up stamina. And it looked pretty clear that at the 40-minute mark, she got under his skin. He lost his cool, drinking water, sniffling, snorting. And yet people are talking about Hillary smug. It just drives me absolutely nuts at this point. I don't think there's even a contest, to be honest.
Well, you raised some good points, Mark, and I so appreciate what you're saying, because this is kind of in a theme of how women get judged more than men. And if he had the sniffles and he's coming down with a cold, then everybody's carrying on about how she had pneumonia recently. But what about him coming down with a cold? A cold can lead to pneumonia. I mean, there's all this double standard stuff.
It really is. And if you just look at the substance, you know, I understand that people are saying they don't feel talked to. I did hear some plans when she was talking about her tax plan, et cetera. And some of what she's speaking is directed by the moderator, so we have to understand, you know, that. I mean, when he's asking about birtherism, well, that's a legitimate question. You know, and some people aren't going to feel like they're part of that conversation. So she is somewhat limited to what she can retort. But overall, I just don't even see how it's what scares me is how we've even gotten to this point, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. You know, when I have Marianne Williamson on the show every couple months, she's always saying, if we don't get the money out of politics, this is what we're going to get. And I think it's so true.
You know, that's when the country was founded under the, you know, if there's a couple of books people can read, The Federalist and Anti-Federalist. One of the big problems when they were founding this country was based on the fears that you would end up having two rich people running against each other. And sadly, that's kind of what we've got.
Yes, and that was addressed by Jefferson or somebody early on. It's been so long since I read that stuff, but you raise good points, and I thank you so much for your call, Mark. Take good care.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. And remember to vote, everybody. Even though I'm not saying who you should vote for, I would never do that, but I just want us all participating to the best of our ability. So let's go to Sylvia in Atwater. Welcome to InterVision.
Oh, thank you. Interesting discussion. And as far as the word bigly goes, I thought he'd coined a new word. He does a lot of coining. But actually, I caught the words last night, you know, during the debate, and the words were big league, L-E-A-G-U-E.
Oh.
Because I thought, my God, he can't even, you know, speak better than an elementary school person. And then, but what I really call it, I think in the debate, Hillary gave this sort of slick, closed, sort of fake, constant smiling demeanor, whereas he was continually looking back to the camera straight into our eyes. He has that incredible magnetism, as far as I'm concerned, though I certainly don't agree on his no climate change and all that. But he does have a magnet, so he kept looking straight at us, you know, when he made his objections. And then also, he's not a man to be toyed with, obviously.
Yeah, I'm clear.
The minute he didn't like something, he immediately bent down to the microphone and said what he thought. And he wasn't going to wait his turn, you know, to finally combat all her stuff. So I thought that was interesting. He's very genuine. He's really sort of selling himself. However, I think General Electric will be very happy with either one, since they're so committed to increased military spending, and in Hillary's case, continuing this horrific war in Syria. And just because they, Kerry said, there will be no compromise with Assad, since because of the way his government fired on protesters back in March 2011. I looked up that incident, and 4 people were killed, but there were water cannon out, tear gas. It was a tremendous melee. And for him to think that we can go on nurturing al-Nusra Front, you can look up CIA al-Nusra Front on the computer, to go on backing that war because of this incident 4 years ago or 5 years ago is absolutely horrific, in my opinion.
We do have a lot of issues, and speaking of looking straight into the camera, I don't know if you heard early in the show when I had Chris with me, and I was talking about the Kennedy-Nixon debates, and Kennedy looked, this is what we researched this morning, Kennedy looked straight into the camera when he answered questions back in 19...
Very effective.
Very effective. So thank you so much. I appreciate it, Sylvia.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And let's go to... I'm looking for I'm going boy, girl, so let's go to Clark in Venice. Welcome to InterVision.
Hi, Anita, thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a few comments, and then you can address whatever you want to I'm off the air.
Okay.
First of all, I thought Hillary's use of Trump's first name, Donald, was very unstatesmanlike while he addressed her as Madam Secretary.
Mm-hmm.
The second was she let slide right by her as Secretary of State for several years Trump's assertion that the UN money is squandered. She didn't have a single valuable program that she countered that squandering of money. And lastly, the moderator needed to turn off the mic from the person that did not have the podium. So that's my two cents. Thank you.
Mm. Well, yeah, that last one, I'm right with you there. Thank you so much for all of your points. And I really do think that would have been a great idea, because I think in the research we did this morning, we found out that Trump interrupted her over 25 times, something like that. So let's try and get one more quick comment in. I won't get to everybody. I'm so sorry. But Nima in Los Angeles?
Yes, hello there.
Hi there.
I just want to say I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and I fought hard for him. And at this point, when the question was, if you don't like either of these guys, which one you choose, I think that's just a rhetorical question. There is no way I can fathom Mr. Trump becoming a president of this country. As much as I'm not a fan of Hillary Clinton, they're not even in the same league. And I mean, it's just ridiculous, if you ask me. I don't like her, but I would definitely vote for her.
Well, I realize that many people feel the way you do, and it's like we're picking, you know, the lesser of two evils in a sense. And so we are in trouble. But I apologize I couldn't get to everybody, but I do hope no matter what, you will get out and vote for someone so we can show our voice and show our participation. Thank you for your call, Nima. I so appreciate it. Thank you all of you for calling. Thank Chris Ulrich, who was with us earlier. And Christine Blasdale is our fun drive producer. G is in master control. Stan is in production. And remember, we're streaming on the live, streaming on the web at kpfk.org worldwide. If you missed the show, go to the audio archive link to catch up. Stay tuned for Tom Hartnett and give me a call. I have resources for you. Do not hesitate to reach out to me. The quote I leave you with today is by Joseph Campbell when he said, "The privilege of a lifetime is being who you are." I'm Nita Valens. Thanks for listening.
The Screwball Culture Center presents Bay Area singer-songwriter, composer, and cultural activist, Mecklit. Wednesday, October 5th at 8 p.m. Immersed in the sonic homelands of her Ethiopian heritage, jazz, folk, hip-hop, and the singer-songwriter tradition, Mecklit performs music that grooves and soars. Hear her celebrate the newness of life and the ties that bind us together, and be inspired to bridge the frontiers between language, tribes, and disciplines. Mecklit, live in concert, Wednesday, October 5th at 8 p.m. For more information and tickets, visit kpfk.org, skirball.org, or call 310-440-4500. KPFK is a proud media partner.
Hello, my name is Kathleen Quinlan, and you are listening to KPFK Radio powered by the people. 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 Santa Barbara, 93.7 San Diego, 99.5 Ridgecrest, China Lake, KPFK.
Hello, this is Daniel Lee, your new local election supervisor. If you are a KPFK listener member or staff member who has not yet voted in the delegate elections, please do so at your earliest convenience. Ballots must be received by True Ballot on or before September 30th. Visit elections.pacifica.org for more information about the candidates and the election. If you have not received a ballot or need a replacement ballot, please email me at les-kpfk2016@pacifica.org with your full contact details. Again, for more information about the candidates and election process, please visit elections.pacifica.org. Thanks for your support for KPFK, and don't forget to vote.